Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Torres. I'll be your host today. My co-host Mike is here with me. No Dave tonight, but he'll be back with us next week. Mike, how is the first week of the baseball season treating you so far?
Well, I feel like, you know, maybe you owe me an apology.
Do I?
Well, I mean, the White Sox are better than what we thought they were going to be.
They are?
You talked about Sean Brook disparagingly. He made one good start, the other one not so good, but not bad. He's their ace.
He came back to earth. I was already, like, getting nervous because I saw that first start, and I'm like, oh, my God, am I going to look like the biggest idiot after all of the anti-Sean Brook stuff I put on Twitter?
Nah, it's gonna be back and forth all year with him for sure.
Yeah, he's not gonna be consistent. I think that first start, all the expected stats were, you know, much worse than what he put up. So, anyway, I don't want to make this a Sean Brook podcast, but yeah, I'm happy that baseball is back. Mm-hmm. Really happy, right? I mean, we're thinking about baseball all year. But let me tell you, Mike, I absolutely hate the first week of the season. All right. There's a few reasons for this. All right.
Okay.
First of all, that first half week, that, you know, Thursday through Sunday, is so damn annoying. For some of these teams, you're just guessing on who's going to be pitching that weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll look at one website, they'll have this guy pitching for the Cubs or whatever, and then you go to another website and somebody else. It's so frustrating. And of course, I'm going to get it wrong. I'm going to pick the wrong guy every time. Then you got the Japan series, right? You got to figure out, well, this guy went 2-for-8 with a run scored in Japan. Does he, you know, should he be in my lineup? It's just so
right. I hate it.
There's just so many moving pieces, and I don't know what's going on. I also, in addition to that, I have this recurring nightmare that we're going to be like a week in, and I'm going to look at all of my teams and see them all in last place and realize, like, my teams are just totally screwed. Like, I got everything wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know it's not likely, but I just envision sometimes, like before the season starts, like all of my teams finishing in last place. This is how my brain works. All of my teams finishing in last place and me just wandering off into the wilderness, never to be heard from again. You might enjoy that, though. That might make you.
Well, happy. No, I mean, I'd always want to hear from you. I mean, okay. I might be okay. I was going to say I might be okay with fewer hot takes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But yeah, I don't find this week enjoyable, even though I'm happy baseball is back. It's a weird thing. I feel like I need to get settled into the season and kind of
get it.
Like,
I get it.
Know what my, you know, who's on my teams, like what I'm working with. Like, I've got too many teams too. Like, I don't know who's where. And it's just a very, like, my head is spinning.
So, yeah, I can relate to that a little bit because I had to do the whole thing with, I was like an existential crisis last week about Nico Horner. It's like, so he's not playing in Japan, but I have to have him active if I want to use him. And then I'm thinking to myself, why does anyone care about Nico Horner this much? Like, nobody does, right? I mean, his family does.
I get it. It's a perfect
example. It's the same thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, we're past that. We got a great guest tonight. Mm-hmm. We've got the one and only Ryan Bloomfield here with us tonight. The man, the creator of the Bloomboards, writer at Baseball HQ. Associate editor of this beautiful, beautiful book right here that I carry with me pretty much all baseball season. It's very weird. There's a lot of weird things I do. This is one of them. He's also co-host of the Bubba and the Bloom podcast. Bubba and the Bloom also have their own Patreon, putting out great content there. On top of that, he probably could do voiceover work in place of Matthew McConaughey. So, Ryan, let's hear that voice. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
It was a good intro until the end there, Taurus. You were doing great, and then it was perfectly executed, and then and then the McConaughey reference hit.
But, I mean, do people? No, that's fine. I assume people say
yes. That, oh yeah, right. Yeah. More so when I first kind of started out and was like a guest on a bunch of shows. I know I was on a bunch with like with the Welsh and Bogman, and they went crazy with it. It was pretty funny. But no, I do get that from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're probably tired of it. I get it. So next time you're on the show, we'll leave that part out.
Oh no, no, I'm joking. Do you really walk around with the forecaster all the time? I like
not in public, because it's, you know, again, might get questions, yeah. But
it might be socially unacceptable and inappropriate. It might be
socially unacceptable, though. At my age, I don't really care anymore. But the forecaster is like, by the end of the year, there's coffee stains all over it. It's the pages are crinkled. There's highlight. There's marker. It's I get my money's worth. Actually, I needed to pay for it this year because I went to first pitch. It was included as part of that. So, I love it. If anybody's listening and doesn't get the baseball forecaster, usually comes out in, the print comes out in January, right?
The PDF day before Thanksgiving, and then the print usually is like mid-December, right around Christmas time.
It's the best Christmas present ever. Best
Christmas, if you love baseball, you love fantasy baseball, this is the book for you. Anybody listening probably already knows that. But let's get into it, Ryan. So I was talking before about some of the reasons that I hate the first week. And another one that I didn't mention is I have this incredible FOMO when I see players that I don't have on any of my teams that maybe I faded during draft season. When I see them doing well, I feel sick to my stomach. Like for me right now, two of the biggest guys, Anthony Volpe, already has like 3 or 4 home runs.
Oh, wait. You made fun of me for drafting Volpe a few weeks ago.
Did I?
Yeah, you suggested suggested it was not a good choice. I said, I think Volpe is going to be on the rebound this year. No, typical New Yorker.
Well, you would think I'd be in on him as a Yankee fan. But I just thought the average wasn't going to be there. I didn't believe in the power. I knew, obviously, he's going to steal bases, but he's carried over some of those gains he made in the postseason, and he's hitting the ball much harder this year. So I'm like, I totally missed on Volpe. I was going to take him in my last main event, and then things just went haywire and I just couldn't take him on my team. So he's one that I really missed on. I think Cedric Mullins is a guy like people forgot about, right? Like this is a guy we were drafting much, much higher a couple years ago, and we just kind of forgot about him this year, let him slip to like the early 200s. And I think that's going to be a huge mistake. And I have none. So I'm so annoyed with myself out of some of these guys for some of these fades that I had in draft season. Want to ask you, Ryan, do you have anybody like that that you're looking at in this first week and you see them doing well and you're like, I missed on them. I really wish I had a share.
For me, it's funny. I was talking to Bubba about this right before our show on Bubba and the Bloom on Tuesday. It's Fernando Tatis. It is absolutely Fernando Tatis. Fernando Tatis for me was like the one first rounder I was like, I don't want anywhere. He's had, I think, one season of 550 plus plate appearances. I said he hasn't really been the same since his suspension and shoulder stuff and all that. And just seeing what Fernando Tatis has done this first week, it is serious, serious FOMO, because he even said like he is now, the Padres are off and running, and Tatis basically himself said he was kind of playing hurt last year and took it easy on the bases, already has 5 steals, already hitting barrels, not striking out. Like I think missing on Fernando Tatis could be a major, major bad move on my part.
Yeah. And you had identified actually not him specifically, but I think it was the Padres as a team in your most recent speculator column at Baseball HQ. You had identified the Padres as a team that's being really aggressive early on. And Tatis is definitely part of that aggressiveness. I mean, what were we doing? I did find it odd. I got him in my last main event because I said to myself, like, it made no sense why some of these guys are being pushed up in drafts. And Tatis was falling to the end of the first, and in a lot of instances, to the early second round. And I was like, what are people looking at? Like, Tatis is the kind of guy you would think during the heart of draft season, like, people would get excited about. You know, like, this is the guy who would get helium, like, he's healthy, and we know the skills are there. Like, what were we doing fading him? What was that about?
That's the thing, though. It wasn't just us, because when I was out in Las Vegas for the NFBC main events and everything, it was like Fernando Tatis was going, I want to say, consistently in the second round, but like, he was a second rounder on a bunch of teams. And I don't know. So that's my one solace, is I'm not the only Tatis FOMO guy.
Yeah.
Glad you got him in your main, though, Torres. That is
I'm liking that right now. Yeah. And you know, I didn't know. Like, I felt pretty confident in the power, obviously. We'll still see if he stays healthy, because that's been a problem for him his whole career. But the stolen bases is really the thing. Like, he, with stolen bases, it's really just about intent. And he's making it very clear that, you know, he's going to steal pretty much whatever he can. Mm-hmm. And the team as a whole is kind of that seems to be their philosophy. So, I think, whereas during draft season, I was thinking 15 to 20 stolen bases is kind of a good ballpark, but I'm thinking we could get 30 to 35. Given
he's already like halfway to what he did last year, which is
that's crazy.
I'll throw an honorable mention out there. I have some O'Neill Cruz, but not a ton. I think O'Neill Cruz is someone where a bunch of folks, if this continues, the Pittsburgh Pirates were also in my speculator column as one of the early, like, most aggressive teams on the bases out there. And O'Neill Cruz has absolutely been a benefactor of that. I think O'Neill Cruz is someone who could be a first rounder, like, in 2026 drafts, if he continues on this trajectory. I think he would also be a pretty big FOMO guy, not first rounder, right? But like, he was going third-ish round and 15 teamers. So he's high enough.
I'm cherishing my fourth round O'Neill Cruz that I got in a DC early in draft season.
Excellent.
I mean, he's been awesome. Mike, I remember we had a conversation trying to bring back exactly what was.
Oh, said. I remember it exactly.
But we had a conversation about O'Neill Cruz. And if I remember correctly, there was.
Opinions
from that you expressed, that he can't hit lefties, that you don't believe in the contact.
Yeah, and it scared me a little bit. Yeah.
Huh?
It scared me a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. And I said, never fade guys. Like, we can't apply the same rules for some of these freak athletes like an O'Neill Cruz. Like, we have to throw contact rate, lefty splits, all of that out the window with these type of guys. You remember that conversation?
I do remember that conversation quite well, actually. And you astutely pointed it out. And I'm really happy for you that you did, and that you want to take a victory lap after 30 at bats, but that's okay. I mean, it's okay. It's okay. No, I mean, the talent is real. I mean, come on. I mean, anybody who looks at the guy knows that he's got that kind of talent in him. The question still remains for me, though, is like, I mean, there's a wide range of possibilities here. And so far, it's been amazing, right? I mean, and he's being really aggressive on the bases, like you said, and a lot of really great stuff there. But can he sustain that? I mean, after 30 at bats, he's got a .261 batting average. If he could do that all year, that would be incredible. Mm-hmm. He's also got .230 in the range. But to your point, if he continues the way that he's swinging the bat, and he's hitting .230 and it gives you 30 and 30, you know, you're not going to split hairs over that. Right. So.
All right. Fair enough. We'll see if this continues. I want to get back to what you were referencing in your speculator column, Ryan, about teams that are being aggressive on the base pass. And I'm wondering, I'm just trying to pull this up here. You had the Pirates, the Padres, the Nationals, the Red Sox, and the Royals, and this was published on April 2nd, these were the most aggressive teams as of that point. And I think there's some signal, even though it's very, very early, I do believe there is signal in something like that. Are there any players that stand out to you that maybe kind of might be under the radar, like if you need a boost in speed that you think would be a good player for fantasy players to target?
What about a little IKF?
IKF.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's more of a 15 team type of thing, but like IKF's hitting ninth, but I think already has Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, proper podcasting, right? I should actually say these dudes' names instead of just nicknames and abbreviations and stuff. But like, I feel like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I say IKF because I can't say his full name, so that's why we do it. But kind of plays everywhere. I think he's going to get you some batting average. He's going to be a benefactor of running a ton if Pittsburgh continues to do that. And I do think there is some signal in like a team-wide stolen base aggressiveness type of thing, even in the first week of the season. So I would go Isaiah Kiner-Falefa as kind of a sneaky. He's not going to get you power, but he's available. He can play everywhere. He can patch holes in your 15-teamer, which we already have holes in our 15-teamers, I'm sure, speaking for all of us. he's someone who could sneakily steal 20, 30 bases.
Yep, absolutely. Tommy Pham, too, on that Pirates team, already has three stolen bases, 27 plate appearances. So he's just someone I kind of I didn't even like consider
in many ways, very aggressive.
I wasn't going to go there, but he is aggressive in a number.
An aggressive man, aggressive in many ways. Yes. I kind of didn't even consider him. Like, this dude's old, man. He's probably going to be on the short side of a platoon, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, I think he landed in the perfect spot. He's hitting at the top of the lineup and being, you know, he's stealing bases for you, which is all you can really ask for from a guy who probably didn't even, you know, in a traditional league, probably didn't even need to draft. All right, let's get back to your speculator column, because I also found it interesting, the chart that you put in there about players that had shown an increase in their max exit velocity. And I think there's quite a bit of signal to this as well. Some notable ones here. Well, let me start with Bryce Terang, because this is a guy who I just kind of thought was a rabbit, you know, someone I think, okay, he's going to get you his 30 to 40 steals, but if he gives you five home runs, like, does that profile really play? We're seeing a almost 2 mile per hour increase in his max exit velo. And I know on your most recent Bloom board that you talked about on your latest podcast, he also is showing an increase in bat speed. So tell our listeners, what are your thoughts on Bryce Terang? And are you taking that information and changing the way that you see him moving forward?
So, like, I mean, honestly, not yet. I mean, we do have to remember we're a week in. Again, this article is really just from the opening weekend. So, like, there's really almost nothing you can take away from like four games, but I do think it is overreact here. Oh, I mean, the name of the column is literally opening weekend overreactions, but I mean, I do think it's interesting at least that Bryce Terang not only hit the hardest ball of his career in the first four games of the season. That's A. B, he's swinging harder. And C, you know who he hit the ball off of? He hit it off Tarik Skubal. Like,
oh wow,
again, I don't, you know, could be nothing, but like, yeah, I just think that's interesting. Bryce Terang is also at least so far holding the K rate down. This is somebody who, like, I guess I was not on at all. I thought he was a pure one trick pony, rabbit, whatever animal, fast animal you want to call him. But like, I think it is interesting that he hit the hardest ball of his career off of Tarik Skubal, and he did it in the first four games, and he's swinging harder. Like, that could be 10, 15 home run type power for Bryce Terang. Now, the thing you want to worry about is he selling out for it, right? So that's something you got to, you know, keep an eye on. Bryce Terang, I think most projection systems had like 240, 250 batting average, but if he kind of tries to sell out for the power, you might see a pretty low floor there. So it's always a little bit of a give and take, but right. Terang was definitely one of the ones for this max exit velo thing that at least stuck out to me, especially because it was off of Tarik Skubal.
Yep. And it does that trade-off is showing early on. His contact rate has gone down 10 percentage points compared to last year. We're not getting crazy over this small sample, but it is interesting. He's hitting the ball harder, swinging faster, but he's losing a little bit of that contact ability. One other thing to note, though, is he is being more aggressive in the zone. In zone swing percentage has gone up from 62 to 71% this year. So maybe we're seeing a little different version of Terang, maybe a little bit more power, a little less safe of a floor in terms of batting average. The steals are going to be there. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And but if he gets you, let's say he gets you 12 to 15 home runs, and he steals you 30 to 35 bases, even if he hits 240, that's still a really valuable profile. So
agreed. And what I was worried about with Terang is like, is hitting that 240, but with like five home runs. And then that, that is a problem because he's not really doing anything for you outside of stealing. So
exactly. Yep. Corbin Carroll was also a big riser in terms of maximum exit velocity. Last year, his max exit velo was 111.5. This year, he's already hit a ball 115.7. That's a really significant jump. Do you look at something like that? That's 4 miles an hour difference. And he's really like 115.7 is borderline. Like we're entering like elite territory, right? You don't really look at Corbin Carroll and think he's a guy who's capable of that. But, you know, so like, does that change? Like, do you think there's a 30 home run bat in there? Do you change your opinion on him at all?
I don't really change it based on kind of the one swing, but like, I mean, yeah, he had, I mean, Carroll hit 25 home runs back in 2023, 22 home runs last year, pretty much all in the second half. And if anything, the fact that he, again, Carroll hit the hardest ball of his career already this season, his previous high was 113.8. And yeah, this 115 is Stantonian. Almost. I think, yeah, the raw power is there for him to hit 30. And it actually, I mean, it wouldn't be that far off what he's already done, which makes it even more, I guess, believable.
Right. So potential like 30, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but potential 30, 50 bat.
Yeah.
So yeah, those Corbin Carroll shares are looking pretty good right now. I'm going to spend 30 seconds on this guy because he's really not relevant for 99% of leagues. Nick Maton also showed up on this leaderboard. Chicago White Sox leadoff hitter.
Carter's just nodding in complete enjoyment of this Nick Maton shout out.
Yeah. Is Nick Maton a thing? I mean, he did well in spring training.
What do you mean, is he a thing? Is he, what does like, that is, even
is
mean?
Is he a person?
He's a human being. He's got two home runs for the White Sox, who are 2-4, baby. First place, two and four in the thriving American League Central.
Imagine if they win that division. That would just be.
No, I think I'm coming after you if they do. I'm driving to your home if they win.
I don't know, man. Nick Maton, I seriously was considering him. Like I started to look at Fab for next week. I'm considering
him for Nick what? Maton. Like, what are you talking about? Considering for your teams? Are these the last place teams that you were talking about already? Like, what are we doing here?
Those teams are screwed. But yeah, that should tell you. I don't know, man. Maybe. There's a little something there, like for a stream, if he's got good.
Yeah,
matchup.
I mean, he's got an opportunity right now, and mostly it's because I know that you guys are not big White Sox followers, nor should anybody really be at this point, but he's got an opportunity leading off right now, mostly because Mike Talkman's been hurt. When Talkman comes back, I think that opportunity might dry up a little bit. But the interesting thing about Maton is that he's been DHing. They don't have him in the field, and they really could use some help at second base and third base, as you know, although Miguel Vargas is doing okay so far at third base, quiet shout out to him. I think Maton is a guy that's filling some space, although he did appear in Ryan's column. He's hitting the ball harder than he's ever hit it before. That being said, he's also 28 years old and he's a bit of a journeyman. He's never really had much of an opportunity, and I don't know that he's going to get a huge opportunity on this team, quite honestly. With they're really trying to see what they have with Sosa, Lenin Sosa, and Brooks Baldwin. Colson Montgomery has not gotten off to a good start in AAA. He was 1-for-20 with 15 strikeouts, actual Devers-like numbers there. And right now they have three outfielders that are part of their bench without really having a lot of flexibility in the roster. So I think this is going to be a pretty fluid situation for the White Sox much of the year in terms of who's playing and, you know, who isn't. And, mixing and matching some guys around, especially as they start to make some trades. But I think the hope always is with a guy like Maton is, you know, maybe he catches 8 or 10 home runs and you can trade him for something that somebody wants. I don't know what that would be. But you know, the hope is there. They're also giving everyday at-bats to Matt Thaiss behind home plate, which is not so great.
All right. I love you, man, but we got to move. We can't spend that much time.
We just lost some listeners there.
Yeah, everybody just
lost lineup rundown.
Yeah.
45 seconds. It's going to be better, guys. It's going to be better.
All right. We will not mention a White Sox player the rest of this show.
I will make sure to mention a White Sox player.
Andrew Benintendi's been good. Hey, Andrew Benintendi's been good. Come on.
All right, so we're going to talk about some beat writer articles. And the first one that we're going to take a look at, you mentioned Rafael Devers and his struggles, Mike. And this one was pertaining to Devers. It was about Monday's article that Paige Leckie at MLB.com wrote. Devers still seeking first hit, K's three times in opener was the title of the article. Since then, he has gotten his first hit. And the article was just basically saying that, he had a quote from him about how he's remaining positive, just kind of a lot of player speak, you know, feeling that he was close. It looks like the past few days he's getting a little bit more comfortable. But I am wondering, is this somebody that we should be really concerned about? And I'm going to throw this to you, Ryan. Like, on a 1 to 10 scale, how concerned are you about Rafael Devers? And do you have him anywhere?
I don't. But on a 1 to 10 scale, 10 being most concerned, I'd say like a 2 or 3.
Okay.
I'm really not worried about Rafael Devers. I think he's behind the whole spring training drama, that sort of thing. But I think you just, and the other thing too is like, I mean, what can you really do about it? Like, obviously in a non-trading league, you're not doing any, I mean, you're just starting Rafael Devers. In a trading league, I just don't think you sell for 50 cents on the dollar. I just think he's the track record's too good. Yes, the shoulders, like there's a chance that he just completely falls off because his shoulders are more injured than we think. But I just think, I don't know. I think we're overreacting if we're trying to sell Rafael Devers at this point.
Mike, you drafted Devers in Glarf, and we talked about that in the pod. I'm not going to bust your chops, all right? I want to check in with you because we talked about, in hindsight, you know, maybe that wasn't the greatest pick when we reviewed your draft. Are you concerned? Like, I'll give you the same question on a 1 to 10 scale. How concerned are you about Devers?
Maybe a 5. And the reason is because guys with track record don't really scare me all that much. And he's got a track record. I think he's going to come through it. I think he's actually got some sour grapes right now, too, besides the fact that maybe his shoulders are a little bit sore. His feelings are hurt. And we have to always remember that baseball players are human beings, first and foremost, and they have families and lives there, too. And signing Bregman hurt him. It hurt his feelings. And he thought he was the mainstay there. And they actually signed a way better third baseman than what he is. And now they're in a predicament. So I think he's going to be okay as long as he's healthy. And he's not said that he's not healthy. I mean, I think that's kind of a big point to be made here, is that his track record is really good. I thought he was where he fell in my draft, that was a good spot to take him, although I did expect to have a few raised eyebrows, which is totally fair in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's been just kind of a perfect storm. You know, he got a late start in spring training. There's the adjustment to being a full-time DH. Possibly, we don't know.
It's very difficult. People think they can poo-poo it all the time, but it's really hard. I see it at the high school level. Guys that aren't playing in the game that are the extra hitter, we call it extra hitter in high school, not so they call it EH instead of DH. They struggle. They struggle to stay engaged. They struggle to figure out what to do in between those at-bats.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely something that's overlooked. You know, and also there is probably sour. It's just like a lot of bad juju, you know, around him.
Of course.
This spring. And, you know, another factor, too, that I was thinking about, and this applies to the Braves as well. I mean, we'll talk about them and how putrid they've been to start out the season. These teams that start out on these road trips after being in spring training for a month, I mean, I think sometimes we can not excuse, but, you know, like there might be a reason like why some of these players are getting off to such a slow start. Like, think about the Red Sox, man. They're in Florida all spring training, you know, for whatever, over a month. Then they had to go to Mexico, right? Then they went to two different cities after that. Like, these play like some of these players just may not be ready. Like a road trip like that is pretty brutal. Same thing with the Braves. Like they went out to the West Coast right after being in spring training for over a month. I just think like that could be, you know, I look at stuff like that, like looking at travel and thinking about, all right, like just physically, what kind of toll is that taking on these players? And I don't know. Am I spewing just kind of like nonsense there? Or do you think there's anything to that?
I think there's a lot to it, honestly. I mean, we're all family guys. We all have kids. We all have things that we have to do for our families and whatnot. And think about being a ball player where you're on the road for 10 days and you don't get to see them and you're not around them and you're not there to help with bedtime ritual and routine and all the different things that go into that. I mean, we are all creatures of habit, and those guys are not able to do that. It's really a difficult thing to wrap your mind around.
Right. Mentally, like you're talking about, also, I think physically, it takes a toll on these guys. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just overthinking it, but I do think there's something to that. Going to move on to our next article. And this was about Casey Mize, a guy that I was really in on as I saw him in spring training. And, you know, he's got the prospect pedigree, and it seemed, you know, second year off Tommy John, seemed like he was putting it together. It was a really good article in The Athletic by Cody Stavenhagen called How Casey Mize Reclaimed His Splitter and Reasserted Himself in the Tigers' Rotation. And it just talks about some of the adjustments that he made, increasing the splitter usage, throwing it harder, talks about him going to driveline. So it's a good article. Encourage you to check it out. Mike, you had actually pointed out Mize in your latest article at RotoBaller as someone that we should be targeting as a waiver wire pickup. Tell me what your thoughts are on Mize and specifically anything from his first start that you took notice of.
Well, Chris, I think it's really similar to what you said. I mean, here's a guy that's got a prospect pedigree, coming off an injury, has a clear opportunity, had a pretty good first start. You know, he pitched into the sixth inning. He did walk three guys, but he struck out six. And so there's something to be said there for that. He only gave up one hit. I when I'm looking at those types of guys to stream in that article, you know, I'm looking for guys that are rostered in that 30 to 50% range in Yahoo. And I thought it was kind of criminal the fact that he was, you know, not getting drafted in a lot of places, because I think he's got a pretty clear shot at making a good number of starts there. And as long as you keep your expectations realistic, I mean, is he going to be Scooble? No. Can he be a good fourth starter in Detroit? I think he absolutely can. And really, the onus is off of him. You know, this was a guy that, if you go back 3 or 4 years ago, was supposed to be their savior, the guy that was riding in on the white horse that was going to come in and save, you know, Detroit's team. And he got hurt and it didn't work out. And he's been trying to find his way ever since. So give him an opportunity, give him some room to breathe. He's the number four starter there. I think that you might be on to something there. At the very least, I think he's a really good streaming option. I would like to see more strikeouts. I think most people would, but, you know, six strikeouts as he pitched in the sixth inning, he looked pretty good that first start out. You don't want to read too much into that, obviously, but this is a player that could make 20 to 25 starts pretty easily and might be able to get you some value out of that.
Right. He carried over, though, some of that swing and miss that we were already seeing in spring training, which is really the encouraging thing. In recent years, he really just hasn't had that, you know, had that swing and miss. Last year was a 9.7 swinging strike rate. This year, in that one start, it was 13.4%, and I believe it was right around there during spring training as well. So it seems like he's doing something different, right? And as that article attests to. The prospect pedigree, he also went 102 innings last year, so I feel like you can depend on him for a pretty decent workload this season. And yeah, Detroit needs him, so I mean, he's better than Kenta Maeda, right? Let me ask you, Ryan, next week, now I'm faced with this dilemma in a online
chat. Yeah, I know where you're going with this. Yep,
he's got the Yankees at home Monday, and I believe it's at Minnesota.
At Minnesota for his
second start.
Yeah.
So in a 15 teamer, I assume you're rolling him out, right?
I am. Yeah. I think you kind of have to with two starts, and given the way Mize has looked, for all the reasons that you guys just said, yes, I think you are. I don't know about a 12 though. The Yankees just scared the heck.
Yeah.
This is a pitcherless podcast now. Heck out of me.
Yes, I should have.
So I don't. I don't know about in 12 teamers with Casey Mize, but it's funny. As you guys were talking, I was going to bring that up because I think like a streamer label on Mize is probably a good one. And it's just a two-step. You love to start, but Yankees, God, it's tough.
The Yankees with those torpedo bats, man. They're like, that's crazy. I've never seen in recent years, like a story that's gotten as much traction nationally as those torpedo bats. Everybody's talking about it.
It's on my local news, like in Oregon. Like
I don't understand, like why is it taking off so much? I don't know. Partially, I'm sure it's because it's the Yankees, right?
Yes.
But this has just been all the rage. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I have to ask, like, guys, is there anything from a fantasy standpoint that's actionable? Like, I saw Jose Trevino is using torpedo bat, right? He was on the list. I don't even know where they're getting this information, but I saw he was using the bat. Am I bidding $100 on Jose Trevino now? Like, what are we doing with this?
It's tough because how do we know? I saw someone on Twitter a couple of days ago post like a list. It was almost like Bloomberg style of these are the users. These are the torpedo users. But how do we know that? How do we know, like, do they mess with it for a game and then not do another game?
Right.
It does. I mean, there is, I will say, like, the science behind it does seem sound, and you do pick up some bat speed from it. But I don't know fantasy wise how we react to that. I know I'm not bidding $100 on Jose Trevino, but
you're bidding $200 on Jose Trevino.
No, $300.
There you go, baby.
Because he's torpedoing. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's I'm kind of avoiding it from my process and my decision making in fantasy. That could be the wrong move, but like, I just think there's so many variables.
Right.
With it, but
right, it, like you yeah, said, I mean, change game to game, you know, we really just don't know.
Think about the guys that have had these torpedo bats in MLB, right? They didn't just try it in spring training. They went to a lab. They took hundreds of swings in a lab to see if it worked for them, right? There is science behind it. It does make a ton of sense, right? But kids don't need it. I've already had the high school kids asking him, oh, yeah, coach, you think we need a torpedo bat? Well, you're using a metal bat, guys. So
yeah, you say torpedo metal bat. That's the final ball.
First and foremost, the answer to that is no. But I think that, you know, you're looking at the output of it, and we're making these decisions already. But what we really got to think about is, you know, spending your time and money, if you're a player, really is going to be looking at, you know, working on pitch selection and better swing mechanics, right? I mean, what they're doing to the bat, yeah, it looks different, but it's essentially the same thing they've been doing for years, which is boning to where the label is, right? To make that wood area harder around there. They just made it bigger, essentially, is what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I really don't care too much about it. Because there's really, like you said, Ryan, there's not much we can do with it.
It's definitely getting close to like mute territory.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I'm tired of hearing about it.
So. I'm guilty of talking. We talked about it on Tuesday on our podcast. So I'm
yeah. I feel like it's obligatory, right? At this point, you have to talk about the torpedo bats, but we're going to move on. Our next segment is looking at a few very small samples. And listen, like we've said several times, we're not going to overreact. Or maybe we will, to, you know, six games or whatever it's been. But I just pulled a couple of random stats. And out of these, I picked five stats. And I wanted to give this to you guys and see, out of these five, what was the most significant to you that at least makes you go, like it makes you pause for a second in terms of the way you're looking at this player or players? All right, so I'll just name the five. Dylan Cruz has actually gone down since I wrote the outline. He's got a 56% K rate. All right, so that's the first one.
Wow.
The Braves as a team have a 36 WRC plus in the season so far. Nathaniel Lowe has a 30% barrel rate. I think that's very sustainable. Nathan Eovaldi, a 1.27 Sierra, okay, which is one of those ERA estimators. People consider that the most accurate. So 1.27 is beyond elite. And Shota Umanaga, 14% walk rate. So some of these are positive, some of these are more negative. So let me kick it to you first, Ryan. Which one of these small samples stands out the most to you?
I will say the Braves as a team, just because it is not just one player. Like the sample for an entire team is a little bit bigger. Am I overreacting to it? Am I now streaming pitchers against the Braves? Of course not. But I think that stands out to me as the biggest thing. Like they're 0-7. Like that's I know it's early, but that's a pretty big dent already.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the Braves lineup, it was okay last year, but I think, and I'm guilty of it, but like I just assume they're gonna go right back to being who they were in 2023, which is like just an elite offense. And maybe that's not the case. So I'd say the Braves out of all that.
Yeah, I have one team. I think I told you about this, Mike, on the show. My DC CLQ, half my lineup is Braves. I mean, and it wasn't even that intentional. Like at a certain point, I was like, maybe, you know, like kind of using it as a tiebreaker between certain players. I'm like, I'm just all in, you know, Ozuna, Harris, Albies, Profar. Oh, Profar.
Oh, boy.
Ouch.
I have Profar on a lot of teams. That one hurt. But yeah, I mean, they need Acuna back, you know, like this team needs a boost right now because Brian De La Cruz ain't it. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Do they go back to being the elite team we saw 2 years ago? I think it's these early returns have me questioning that. What about you, Mike? Who stands out to you the most out of those small samples?
For me, it's Imanaga. I'm really concerned about him, and you and I have talked about it offline a number of times. I think he's a really good pitcher, but he might be a guy that's a better pitcher in real life than he is in fantasy purposes. I'm really worried about this walk rate. And if you go back in some of his time in Japan, he had some pretty high walk rates going back and was really struggling towards the middle of last year. Not that you would notice it by looking at the stats, but he was really struggling with his command and where he was putting pitches. And it concerns me when you look at where he's at right now. Granted, again, small sample size. We don't want to draw sweeping conclusions after two starts. But his walk rate was 14%, which was equivalent to his strikeout rate. So he's got a K minus walk of 0 at this point, which for those of you listening at home is not good if you're paying any attention whatsoever. But last year's 4% walk rate is not sustainable. This is a pitcher that could absolutely have an ERA closer to 4 than 3, and somebody that's being drafted as an elite starter that I just am not seeing.
Yep, and he was someone that was identified on our show with Thomas Nestico a couple weeks ago as someone that he was concerned about based on what he saw in spring training and some of the stuff metrics. Interestingly, though, I just pulled up his pitching bot metrics as well as the stuff plus numbers. Everything there under that hood looks really good. Actually, his stuff on both models is up, and his location and command is up. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to take away from these things. You know, I look at that stuff, but I try not to go too crazy with that. But yeah, someone to watch, because if he's not maintaining that elite walk rate that he had last year, then I think he's going to be a disappointment relative to where you drafted him. Yeah. Quickly, what do you guys think about this guy, Jake Mangum? Is he someone like, I mean, we're talking, you know, someone who's really stood out this first week here. I think he's what, like 7 for his last 8 or I think he went hitless or, you know, it may be worse than that since yesterday, but what do you think about him? Is he someone that you think is a viable pickup in a 15 teamer?
I think it's a trap. I think we'll look back at Jake Mangum. I keep on and call him Jake Magnum, but Jake Mangum at the end of the season to be like, why did I spend $70 in fab on a really, it's a 29-year-old rookie, has never played in the majors until this season, 16 plate appearances. Like the playing time, I think, is there, at least for now, with Josh Lowe out. But like, I don't know, man. I just feel like I've seen a lot of Jake Mangum types over the years, and it usually does not end well. I think we have probably seen the best week of Jake Mangum.
I feel so proud to be in the, in main events. There were 11% of managers that started him this week.
Okay.
I was one of them, baby.
That's right. What'd you pay for in Fab for him?
$9.
Okay. That's fine.
That's doable.
Honestly, that's fine.
I had Josh Lowe on that team. I needed playing time. But yeah, it probably, I can't imagine this run is going to last anywhere close to what he's done.
Should have gone for Nick Maton.
I mean, drop him for Nick Maton. Nick, I'll just move on to my
next, the White Sox again.
29-year-old non-prospect who's never done anything.
I told you I'd fit one more reference in.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You got it.
But yeah, Mangum, I think the other thing too is that, like, if he stops hitting, they are playing Cameron Meisner. They also have Johnny DeLuca. So there's really three guys for good two spots. God. It's a mess. Yeah, I'm not saying any of them are good options, but I think he'll probably go for more than is warranted this weekend here. So, but yeah, I got the Jake. That has been a nice run. That has felt good to have him on my team for that, but not counting on that continuing. All right, we are going to transition away from baseball talk. We got about 5 minutes left here. And as always, we have our mental health minute where we talk about things that we are doing or tips around mental, physical health. We really want people to walk away from the pod, not only with something fantasy baseball related, but something that hopefully they, you know, you could apply to your personal life as well. And rather than us going around like we usually do, this week I wanted to do it a little different and just kind of throw out a topic and get your thoughts on it. This has been something that I am really trying to work on and with mixed success. And I wanted to put this out there because I think that a lot of people also struggle with this, and that's using. And I think, you know, the start of baseball season, like a lot of us, we're really plugged into everything that's going on. We're checking box scores. We're on Twitter. We're, you know, reading articles, whatever it is. And, you know, everything's on your phone, right? And it's not just baseball stuff. Like people, there's just our brains have been programmed in a way by these phones, whether it's TikTok or whatever social media you use. It grabs your attention. And I notice myself spending way too much time on the phone. So I wanted to get your thoughts. Like, how do you guys do with that? And like, do you have any tips or tricks or ways that you're able to set limits around your phone use? Because it's really not good for your mental health.
It is not, but I am not the one to give advice on this, because I am just as bad as everything, especially like I've added as part of like our Patreon on Bubba and the movie, we have like a Discord. I get like a thing on my phone every time someone posts, and it's just like, oh my God. The only thing I found effective, and I try to do this when my kids are around, kind of that 5 to 7 p.m. type hour, dinner time, that sort of thing, is just I have to physically put it somewhere else, because if the phone is around me, I'm going to look at it. Same. Maybe other people can not do that when you're next to your phone, but I literally have to either go put it in upstairs, put it in the kitchen, somewhere where I'm not, because then it is physically impossible to not check your phone.
It's
when
insane,
it's somewhere else. But that's the only thing. And I trust me, I am not like, I will walk into the other room and get it and then check it. Like, who just hit a home run and that sort of thing. So,
right.
And I definitely have noticed it's hardest. Like right now, that baseball season is back. There's things going on. You don't want to miss anything. It's a really good point.
Yeah. Mike,
what about you?
Well, I think for me, when I'm around, like when we were just talking about being in Arizona, right. And I'm thinking about it and I'm going, anybody that I would want to talk to right now is here. So I don't need my phone. I'm not connected to it because I can just connect to those people directly right here, which is what I loved. I mean, Chris, it was the first time that you and I ever met. We were sharing a room, and Ryan and I go back a long way at Arizona, and have a tremendous amount of respect for Ryan, and the friendship that he's shown me being in the industry over the course of time is really incredible. And Ryan is a leader in that kind of stuff around our industry. But for me, like with the coach in baseball. Shout out to my Batavia boys today who won 7-4 in terrible weather in Chicago.
Yeah, baby.
Shout out to Coach Kyle and the boys. Kellen way to get the save. AJ way to not get a run. Mason, sacrifice fly, baby. Small ball wins. Okay. The thing about it is for me is that if I'm around people that I know that I want to be around, then I don't really even think about using the phone. And I try to make sure that I know, like, if I'm going to spend time with my kids or Katie and I and the kids are together doing something, I really try to make sure that the phone is away and not part of that kind of stuff. It's a little easier for me because I'm older than you guys by a significant amount. So I remember a time when there wasn't cell phones and when there wasn't computer technology and stuff like what we have now. And so it's a little easier for me to do that. But I find that when my level of engagement is up, I don't really go to it as much. Now, granted, at 9 o'clock at night, when everybody's getting ready for bed, I'm on it constantly, just like, you know, we're talking about here. But it's something that I've really had to work hard with, too. It's a natural go-to to pull it out of your pocket every 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's like a pacifier, right? Like, it really, like, it's just like, you know, you have a free moment or maybe you're stressed or what. Like, there's so many reasons why you're going to reach for your phone. And I'm like you, Ryan. Like, if it's physically in the same room as me, I may think, all I want, like, oh, I can just leave it there. No, there is like a gravitational pull. And it's really effed up, man, the way, you know, it's wired us. But it's something that I need to work on. I know many people could benefit from working on that as well. So I just wanted to put it out there. And anybody who's listening who maybe, you know, this is an issue for, like, really just like take whatever steps you can to work on it. Cause like it does, it affects your mental health. It's those constant dopamine hits. You're like frying your brain, man, like constantly getting that dopamine hit from the phone. And, you know, we're all fathers and I do my best when my kids are around because that's not, they need to feel that they're the priority, not my phone, you know? Right. And listen, there are times where I have used my phone in front of them way too much. And like, I look back and I'm like, no, that's not the right thing. I got to stop that crap. So let's continue this conversation. I think it is important because I think a lot of people can relate to it. But we're going to leave it there. Ryan, this was great. Thank you so much for coming on. Everybody knows where they could find you on Twitter at RyanBHQ. He's over at Baseball, writing the Speculator column every week at Baseball HQ. He's got it all going on. Listen to the Bubba and the Bloom podcast, which is excellent, excellent. So tremendous. We're going to leave it there. We're going to leave it there for today. We will be back next week with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening. For Mike Carter, I'm Chris Torres. Thanks again for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat. $7.55